This is Ben Fred Fridays on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. And as always, we're presented by Henderson and Watercutty, law firm based in Clayton, helping out folks in St. Louis and Illinois, no matter the offense, no matter how big, how small. Henderson Watercutty, head to STLCriminalDefense.com. And I want to personally thank the guys at the firm for sponsoring our Stanley Cup coverage throughout the series with the Boston Bruins and the St. Louis Blues, the NHL champion, Stanley Cup champion, St. Louis Blues. So, Ben, as we visit on this Friday, there's going to be so many stories that come out, you know, and have come out in the last 48 hours about what this means for people, what this means for long-suffering fans, what the parade might be like tomorrow, what it's going to be like all summer for a Blues fan and a St. Louis native and a sports fan and all those things. Tell me, first of all, just the game itself, what it was like to be there game seven and watch the Blues win the Stanley Cup.
Man, it's one of the, it's the coolest event I've ever covered by far, just in terms of what it meant, the moments behind it, what all led up to it. I mean, you're talking about the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, which is what every hockey player wants to do growing up. I mean, and that's a cliche, right? But, like, listening to Ryan O'Reilly's dad, you know, talk about how his son practiced that game in their kitchen as a kid against his brother thousands of times, it's real. And, you know, these guys were literally out there living their dreams. That's pretty wild. And obviously with what it means to St. Louis, in terms of just like what it's like to cover it, you're in the garden. It's a massive, you know, place, wall to wall noise. Bruins fans are fired up. You got Julian Edelman being the flag waver. The place is going nuts. Rob Gronkowski's in the house, you know, they're feeling good. I mean, the way they start the game, the Blues, I think, had a good first surge, and then the Bruins just got on them, and they were just coming in waves, and they could have very easily been up 2-3 nothing, except you saw Jordan Binnington was in the zone. I mean, we've seen him be good, Dan, but I don't know that we've seen him like this. That split save that he made with his pad, where I don't know how he got up from that. I thought he injured himself. He shut down that first power play, and once he did that, you kind of went, okay, this might be Jordan's night. And it was. He was a beast. You're covering this with people on your back, literally. Like, there's so many people in the press box that there are people pressing up against you as you're trying to write. So you're just like chaos. And then, you know, you kind of felt like, look, the first goal is going to win this. And I saw a stat today that said, like, there has not been a lead change in game seven of a Stanley Cup final for, like, and I don't want to mess it up, but it's a long time. Usually in that game, the first goal wins, and go figure, it's Ryan O'Reilly who gets it by redirecting a shot that I don't know how he got a stick on it, Dan. I really don't. This guy is incredible. You see him in the hallways before games where he's like balancing and tapping a golf ball on his hockey stick like Tiger Woods does with the club. I mean, you see him do all these kind of crazy, like, warrior type workouts, and they're all for this moment. And, you know, he makes this incredible deflection of a Jay Bouwmeester shot that goes right between Tuukka Rask pads by, I'm not kidding, like, you know, the hair of a chin. I mean, he almost blocked that, and that's your first goal. And then the second one comes, and it couldn't be more poetic for that series. I mean, you have Brad Marchand, the biggest, you know, most polarizing, the littlest, most biggest polarizing player out there, and he gets beat by Jaden Schwartz on a pass that Schwartz played himself beautifully off the wall, and Marchand's upset, so he kind of hangs his head and goes back to the bench for a change. And because of that, Alex Pietrangelo comes flying up the ice uninhibited and gets the puck from Schwartz and makes a beautiful play and, you know, pulls a shot out of, I don't know where he got it from, but pulled it out of deep and puts it in. And after that, it was just kind of icing on the cake. You get Shin with the insurance, which is so important. And then how about Zach Sanford, man? I mean, this kid grew up wanting to score that goal for the Bruins. He told me down there on the ice, he imagined that goal in street hockey, you know, so many times. I mean, this kid stayed in training camp. His father passed away, because he knew he wanted him to make this team. I mean, crazy. We've talked a lot about how this is stuff you can't make up, and it lived up to that in game seven.
And I have so many questions for you, but
sure. I'm rambling, so I haven't slept. So if I'm talking too much, tell me to shut up, and I'll try to stay on point here.
No, I get it. I mean, you guys worked late Wednesday. You're writing all day on Thursday, and here we are on a Friday morning talking about this, and not many people around St. Louis have slept, and I get it. How would you encapsulate what this means for the town? And I say that because myself, being a native and a St. Louis Blues fan growing up, I've talked more about this in this run than I ever have on anything involving my father. And I mean anything, sports, non-sports, who's been gone for over two decades. He loved the Blues. He truly bled blue. And this was his time of year. This was his thing that he did. He loved to watch the Blues regular season every night, go to games, watch the playoffs, spit and curse at the TV when they'd lose. At one point, he took a little TV out, ripped it out of our wall, was going to throw it through a window. And I'm not kidding about that. And I tweeted it last night. All I could think about was my father and what it meant and what that moment meant. I mean, he would have loved it. So my point and my question is, what do you think this means for the city of St. Louis? How do you encapsulate what something like this means and sports means to the town after winning and what they did on Wednesday night?
Yeah, I think it's just such a reward for those who have stuck with this team, and even people who say they've given up on the team, they know they really haven't. They're always looking over their shoulder, watching what the Blues are doing. And Tom Stillman, I think, said the best when he just said, I said, what's your message to the fans? Here you are. And he just said, I just want to tell them thanks. Thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for believing we can get here. Thanks for knowing that this day was going to come. Obviously everybody involved wished it would have come sooner, but man, it makes it sweet when you have to wait like that. Doug Armstrong talked about being able to move past that era and really put all that stuff on a shelf. The history was there, the painful that he hated when he got here, Dan, the same old Blues trope. And he felt like it was unfair to him because he wasn't a part of it before. And then he said, no, I became a part of it because we didn't win. And now I feel like we can finally say, yeah, we respect our history and we own it. But now we're in a new uncharted area. And that's what that game meant to me, is the Blues were entering an uncharted area. They were no longer held down by their past. And now that past is almost, to some degree, it's romanticized, right? Because it's all the things they went through to get here. And, you know, you have helped me understand what it's like to grow up watching it, because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and be a phony. I didn't watch hockey growing up. I grew up in Sedalia, Missouri. You know, we didn't really have a big hockey following of the Blues. I knew about the Blues, but I wasn't watching every game. My dad wasn't watching games. So I've had to understand as fast as I can, you know, what it means and how this fan base ticks. And what I've learned is they're insanely loyal. They are a little bit edgy, and for good reason. And now to have this moment, I think a lot of folks are thinking, you know, just kind of going through their own personal history, whether it's the relationships that they built around the team, whether it's they're having their heart ripped out, and how that makes this feel so much sweeter. You talk to a guy like David Perron, who's been a Blue three times. He was traded, he came back, you know, expansion draft took him away, he comes back. He keeps coming back to St. Louis. It's like a gravitational pull. And he'll tell you that, you know, all those disappointments make it that much sweeter. And for him, a guy who got to the Stanley Cup final last year and lost with Vegas, it means that much more to, you know, when you know how bad something hurts, you can appreciate it, you know, when it goes your way. And I think a lot of people are just thinking of, you know, all of the relationships they had and all the great memories they had. And it's such an insane sport. I mean, I don't know, you know, it's such a mix between just aggression and adrenaline and an incredible skill and the emotional roller coaster of these games, especially in the postseason. There's not a single moment where you can take a breath. It's emotionally and physically and exhausting, even if you're not playing in it. Imagine being out there. So I think the fan base it's almost been a cathartic experience for some, and it's probably stirred up a lot of memories across the entire fan base. And there's going to be more memories made. I mean, this parade on Saturday is going to be, I can't wait to see the photos. I can't wait to see the aerial overhead photos, because it's going to be something amazing. I can remember when they did the photos of the Royals parade in KC, and when the Cubs got theirs in Chicago. It's going to be wild. I mean, look how many people showed up downtown for Game 6. You know, that many people on a Saturday for a parade headed into Father's Day. It's going to be an incredible sight.
I am proud to add to the website, as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients. And this is why you can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again. And really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. stlcriminaldefense.com. Check it out. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
What did you give me a sense of in what it was like, and what did you take away being on the ice after the game and in the locker room? There's always unique stories or things that you see and they just catch your eye because it's once in a lifetime. It's unique. Is there anything that comes to mind when you think about that?
Yeah, and they're fresh because I try to get some of them up at stlta.com just before they faded, you know, and a few things. Like, one, you're out there on this ice and you're thinking, I'm going to fall and crack my head. The ice isn't slick at the end of a game. I mean, it's like you're walking on concrete, basically. It's just bizarre to kind of put yourself out there and see what it's like from their level right after a game. I mean, you got Ryan O'Reilly literally in a group hug with his family dancing. And while they're chanting Snook, 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 and I'm like, what is this? Is this some Canadian thing? I don't know. Okay, Snook is his nickname. His grandmother gave it to him, his Irish grandmother, and it's like a nickname for like a troublemaker. And she called him Snook growing up because the family ran a group home, and there were a bunch of Ryans. So their Ryan was Snook. And, you know, the family still calls him that. His dad is talking about, yeah, hey, nobody knew this. And we had an idea, Dan, that he was playing hurt. We didn't exactly know what. We'd seen him in the dressing room with his ribs taped up. So you figure he's banged up a little bit. No, he played with cracked ribs. And he got hurt in the Winnipeg series. And it really started to show up in the Dallas series. People were wondering why he was missing faceoff, why he was struggling on faceoffs. It's because he had a banged up side. He started getting better as the postseason went along, and you obviously saw it. I mean, his play got back to where it had been, and he, you know, basically became Wayne Gretzky in the Stanley Cup final. That jumped out. Zach Sanford with his uncle on the ice. I mean, this is a family that's been through so much. You know, skating over to see his uncle, trying to get him out on the ice. He didn't want to go out there without skates on. He was nervous to walk on the ice, so he comes over and sees him. I've never seen Alexander Steen smile like that ever. I didn't even know his mouth could open that wide. He's just skating around with his tooth missing, you know, screaming, champ, I'm the champ. Vladimir Tarasenko taking a moment to be with his son. Man, I'll tell you what, Dan, I had a good feel about the Blues in Game 7. You know, we made predictions. I picked them to win in Game 7. Just for the record, I picked them every series right so far. So I'll take my credit on that and then admit that I also wrote them off in January. So
yeah, that's fine too.
I'm like one for one. But Vladimir Tarasenko, who wants nothing more than to win a Stanley Cup for the St. Louis Blues and be with his family. Like, that's all this guy wants to do. He doesn't care about anything else other than winning hockey games and being with his family, takes a moment to celebrate with his son, kind of the two of them together, and he's getting a FaceTime from Yadier Molina. That's pretty cool. I thought he had a good game. He didn't show up in the goal scoring, but his block shot led to one of the goals. He had an assist on one of the other goals. He was a stud, and he has been this whole postseason. Jordan Binnington, and Ryan O'Reilly, I think, dropped F-bombs on national TV. So one of them, being Ryan O'Reilly, apologized profusely. I don't think Jordan apologized. Not a shocker there. He's just an interesting cat, man. And he had a great line that his teammates let us know about, thanks to Twitter, about how he basically said, "I'm not going to spend $6,000 on tickets and not win."
Right, I saw that.
It's incredible. Pat Maroon going nuts. Pat Maroon's brother Phil trying to take the cup. And Pat having to scold him and say, "No, Phil, you can touch it, but you can't lift it." I mean, just stuff like that. Like Bob Plager, like literally, I swear to God, I don't know if Bob Plager had one of those like rolling Bud Light coolers or what, but Bobby Plager is just handing Bud Lights to everyone. Like he's trying to give Bud Lights to like children, just, like the Bud Light fairy out there on the ice. Like Bernie Federico running around with a cup over his head, just thanking Blues players, like as if he's like, some lowly intern that they let touch the cup, like so grateful to be out there. Just so many things like that are kind of just running through your head. Petrangelo just telling me, good luck writing it, because he's right. I mean, you couldn't create a better story. And, I think the one other thing that really jumped out to me, well, there are two, and it was with Armstrong and also Tom Stillman. I kind of told Stillman, I said, hey, thanks for letting the Post-Dispatch off the hook, because of obviously, everybody knows about the ads that accidentally ran, saying congratulations on winning the Stanley Cup before game six, and they lost, and everybody was ready to turn the Post-Dispatch into Steve Bartman. And I said, thanks for letting the Post-Dispatch off the hook. And he kind of gave me a look, and I said, a little bit, a little bit. But no, we were laughing, and he's been, I mean, he, Tom, and I don't know a bigger Blues fan than Tom Stillman. I'm so happy for him, because he lives and dies with this stuff. I mean, he's on the ice, tears in his eyes, talking about how this is for people who, come up to me and tell me that their parents waited their whole lives to see the Blues win a Stanley Cup, and you can relate to this, Dan. Tell them that, their parents were buried in their Blues sweaters. I mean, it's not a joke. This really happens. He goes, I get pictures from people's weddings where their cake is a Blues cake. He goes, this is for them. And it really is, something bigger than us. And then Doug Armstrong, Doug Armstrong said after the Blues, made it to the Western Conference Finals, that they were going to extend Craig Berube. But this thing comes up with the national reporters every time. So one of the guys goes, hey, does this mean you're going to take the interim tag off Berube? And Armstrong goes, no, I think we're going to let him go.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, typical Army. That was funny. I mean, Berube, just for the little fact there, the seventh coach all time to take over a team midseason and win a Stanley Cup. And one of the other guys happened to be on his staff. And Larry Robinson, which is pretty remarkable.
How about and there's so many questions I have about this. And again, this is presented by Henderson Watercutty and a full defense firm, criminal defense firm. And you can see all their great questions that you may have about the smallest or biggest offense at stlcriminaldefense.com. There's a couple of guys that I wanted to ask you about former players. You mentioned Bob Plager. You mentioned Bernie Federico. Brett Hall and Al MacInnis. How about those two? And Pronger and Tkachuk and those guys that built this legacy that we saw come to a crescendo on Wednesday night.
Yeah, so I got down there a little bit later. I didn't see those guys out on the ice. Now, that's kind of the interesting thing about being out there is, like, there is no – it's a free-for-all. And you're not like setting up interviews. You're just roaming around. So I know that they were down there. I know I saw photos of them, but I didn't see them with my own eyes down there. And I think if anybody sees Brett Hull, they need to send it out a tweet, make sure he's okay. Cause I think Brett Hull's been hitting it harder than anybody for a while now.
God bless him.
He's having a time. I want to be where he is. If you can find him, you know you're in the right spot. I think for the next couple weeks. But I didn't get a chance to see them much. I saw a couple photos of those guys hugging, and that, you know, the cool thing for me was that those guys were kind of around the way the garden is set up. Like, some of those guys were. There's not like a suite where you couldn't see them. They're all kind of up around the press row, and you could see their reactions and see some of them. But as far as on the ice, I didn't get a chance to see them much, or I certainly didn't get a chance to talk to them because it was kind of a chaos. But goodness, I know they're enjoying it. I did see a photo going around of Hull where he's like, at one point he's like, I think kind of like blazer open, and he might be doing a little Chris Farley impression.
I saw that too.
I don't know what game that's from, but I hope it's from Game 7 because that would be remarkable. But I think he's like basically become he's become like a Stanley Cup meme right now. So I imagine we'll get some more photos of Hull too.
It's unbelievable. It's great.
How about this though? Like the fact that, like, the way we're sitting up there in the press box, like we're seated next to the guys who don't dress, like the Black Aces. So
sure.
You're sitting there writing and you're like, okay, I'm writing. And they start to react before you know what's going to happen. Like, they know it because they play it and they sense it. They can tell when a goal is going to happen. So they're going, you feel this energy coming off of them before the Blues score a goal. Like that's a weird thing about that was like you seeing them react to the game, and then they're going just nuts. And when they knew, you know, when they knew it was over, that little party that happened up there before they rushed down to the dressing room was pretty cool to see. And then how about the fact that like Chris Thorburn, who gets to, you know, go out there and they make sure he gets the cup, like one of the first guys, you know, despite the fact he didn't play in the series. I thought that was pretty special and shows how much he means to them. And I think too, you know, not to go on a tangent, but there are some guys on this team who didn't play key roles that deserve a lot of credit. And he's one of them because he's a leader, whether he plays or not. And a guy like Jake Allen, who could have been a total, you know, thorn in the side of this team after Jordan Binnington takes over, but he was the opposite of that. He helped Jordan Binnington. He taught him about the rinks that he didn't know. He taught him about the opponents that he didn't know. I mean, you can go through this team and pick guys left and right who are an example of being a true teammate. I mean, Alexander Steen, who goes down to the fourth line. He doesn't think he's a fourth line player, but there were times when that was their best line, you know, with him and Thomas, and you put those guys together. And there's examples of that all around this team. Look at how the defensemen cycled in and out. You know, Bortuzzo was not pouting after game 7 because he didn't play in it. He was happy to be drinking from the Stanley Cup. I just think that it's so rare, you know, to find a true, true team in professional sports because there's all these other pressures. There's money on the line, there's endorsement deals, there's your free agent, you know, contract that's coming up, and there's pressure from your agent and your peers and even your family of why aren't you doing this? Why isn't this happening? And these guys did a great job, I think, under Berube of blocking out all that noise of becoming a true team, and there's a million examples of it.
Absolutely. I want to go back to the St. Louis native, Pat Maroon. And you think about great figures in sports history in St. Louis and great moments or championship teams. To be a St. Louis kid that wins the Stanley Cup for the Blues. And I'll never forget this. He came into the booth in a baseball game when they signed him. And it was kind of the Blues launch, you know how they do that in the summers after June, it's into July, and now you're into August, and camp is right around the corner, and the Blues will ask us, hey, can you throw a couple guys on and, you know, promote the season coming up on Fox Sports Midwest and, you know, chance to sell some tickets. Well, you know, we got the St. Louis kid that decided to come home, and it's Pat Maroon. He wanted to be closer to his son, and, you know, and that was a great story in itself, just to have a – you know, the story of so many of these kids in St. Louis that are developing now into NHL players. Well, here's another one. Oh, and by the way, he's going to play for the Blues. Great. He comes in the booth, and he was great. He was fun. And I remember asking him the question. I said, can you even allow yourself or envision it, what it might be like as a St. Louis kid to win the Stanley Cup for the St. Louis Blues? And it was almost like he got goosebumps on his arm. I've got him now. And, you know, tears in his eyes. He was so emotional about it, but, you know, he's like, it's almost incomprehensible. Well, now he's done it, and he had one of the biggest goals in the history of the franchise in Game 7 of overtime, which every kid dreams of, against a St. Louis kid. What do you think this is like in this moment, and what did you take away from Pat after the game on Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously euphoric. I mean, what else? There aren't words for kind of you go through what he's feeling and being there with his family and, you know, his son's out there. And this is all he wanted, was to be close to his son. He could have made more money if he would have gone elsewhere. He decided to take a little bit less to come home and make a run at, you know, winning this thing. And who knows where he will go from here. I would got to think the Blues would want to bring him back, you know, get the band back together after winning the Stanley Cup. He's one of the few guys on this team whose future is a little uncertain, as of where things stand right now. But, you know, he is one of the guys on this team who I think he got better and better at becoming the face of this team as the season went along.
I agree.
He was playing through some stuff early on. He was not always healthy, but didn't always talk about it. He was a guy who struggled at times. And, you know, the running kind of conversation was, you know, I think I've mentioned this before, was like, was he going to make his bobblehead night? And or would he be the kind of the sacrificial lamb of sorts that the team parted ways with to quote unquote send a message? And that was a real discussion of like, could the Blues tell him to walk because they're trying to, you know, send a jolt to the core after the firing of Mike Yeo? And look at him now. You know, he, as the postseason went along, I think started to understand. Not that he didn't understand. No, he's from here. He knows. Started to be willing to voice what it meant to him as a guy from St. Louis. He always knew, but he could have very easily said, look, I'm focused on the game. And that would have been understandable. I mean, the last thing you need to do is create more pressure. But he made himself the voice that said, look, not only do I want to do this for us and for me, but I want to do this for St. Louis, and here's why. And listening to him talk about what it meant after the Rams left and what it meant, you know, to have a good relationship with the Cardinals and to want to see an MLS team come and the licks that St. Louis had taken and what this might do to help change perception. And also not even just change perception as much as give St. Louis something to be proud about. I think sometimes we talk so much about what other people think of us that it's more about, you know, let's do something for St. Louis as opposed to let's do something to make other people think we're better. Like, I think Pat Maroon was like, look, I want to do this for the people who know what we are really about. And that to me was what this team did in a big way. You know, the Rams left. We obviously were upset that they left, but more than anything, we were upset because they slandered, you know, the town on the way out through the relocation. Nobody seems to pick up on that except for a few. We talked about this last week, but, you know, look at what happened last night. You've got the Cardinals players perhaps distracted because the Blues are playing in a game seven. You've got a game that is, you know, Gloria is being played in Miami at the game from their team, because they know what it means. You've got Busch Stadium opening up its doors to host a hockey crowd that wants to watch the game on the Jumbotron. You've got Fish in town covering Gloria at Chaffetz Arena. You've got, I think it was Vampire Weekend playing Gloria at the Fox, maybe one of the other concert venues in town. I mean, that's what St. Louis is about. And it doesn't matter what other people think, we know. And I think Pat Maroon was kind of the voice of that. He wanted to say, look, I know where I'm from. I know what it's about. Let's go do it for us. And man, that story sells here. And that's why he will be, I mean, you could build a statue of him today. St. Louis kid, you know, who did the unthinkable. All of these guys, Dan, are going to be legends.
Absolutely.
I mean, and all of them should be for what they represent. I mean, Jake Allen should be a story that parents tell their kids about. Look, this guy, he failed. He picked himself up. He got better as the season went along. And, you know, who knows what happens now? I think the Blues have obviously found their goalie. Whether Jake Allen has to be traded, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But he had a choice to make. He could have either helped the process or hurt it. And look what he did. You know, there is examples like that all over the place. I mean, look at Craig Berube, a guy who gets fired, told he's not good enough, and now look at him, the seventh interim coach to win a Stanley Cup. I mean, there's perseverance in this team, layers upon layers of it. And I think that, to me, is why it was such a compelling team to cover. And the guy right in the middle of that is Pat Maroon.
Absolutely. Some final thoughts here, and we'll wrap it up. I know you've got a lot going on this Friday and getting ready for the parade tomorrow and covering various stories and angles of this. What do you think that, you know, on a business side, you got to think about this. Berube, obviously, interim tag removed. He comes back head coach. And you mentioned where I was going to go next. What do you do with Jordan Binnington and Allen, and how do you think that plays out here in this offseason?
Well, it's a good question, and I think before we can know what to do with Allen, the Blues have to know where Allen's at. You know, you don't want to bring a guy back, I don't think, on a deal just because he can, if he's not going to be happy, if he's not going to be content. If he's comfortable with competing, then you have a great situation. You know, if he's not, and he has to be honest, if he's going to be, you know, if he's going to be a guy who is not able to do this for another year. And I can understand why that might be the case. And I think you look at some sort of a way to, you know, try to move him. And he plays better enough that I don't know that he's untradeable. And there was a time when he might have been untradeable. I don't think that's the case anymore. So that's a question that, you know, that's kind of as you turn the page forward, what happens here. But the Blues have to, in my opinion, commit to Jordan Binnington as their goalie. And I understand that sometimes guys are 1 year and gone, but I don't know what you've seen from Jordan Binnington that suggests that you can't commit to them. He just won the first Stanley Cup for your team. He stood on his head in game 7. He is a guy who bounces back from bad performances. He doesn't really go in prolonged slumps. He plays a sound style that is not fluky. I mean, he might go through bad spells from time to time or in the future, but I think what you see there is a guy who's pretty solid. And I don't know, I would hate to see that get away, because this is the kind of goalie the Blues have looked for years and years, and he seems to be here. And as long as he's here and playing like this, then there's no reason to think the Blues couldn't be back in a Stanley Cup final sooner rather than later. So really there isn't much up in the air with this team. You know, like what happens with Joel Edmondson, I don't know. I mean, maybe he goes on somewhere else. But, you know, the other big one, Dan, is Maroon. And I got to think he'll want to come back.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what is he going to want to get paid? That's the big question there. And, you know, he did take a bit of a hometown discount. I don't know that he might not be willing to take another one if considering how well he played this season. So, you know, that's the big one, too. But Allen, you know, I don't know. It's basically going to come down to what he feels like is his role in terms of with this team and his opportunity elsewhere. The Blues could very much say, hey, you're the backup and that's it. But they have to make a decision as to if that's healthy for the team. And Jake, if Jake can be the teammate that he was this year, then maybe that's what ends up happening. And you mentioned Berube. I don't know that there's a gentleman's agreement in place, but there seems to be zero concern that someone else is going to jump in and try to poach him. And I think a lot of that part is on him. I don't think he wants to go anywhere else. He was down and out to some degree when Doug Armstrong brought him in. And I think there's a respect there between those two guys that they both feel like they can trust one another in a business that's not always easy to trust guys. And listening to Army talk about Berube, it's funny to me because he has changed. Berube has changed the way Army thinks about hockey in this way. It wasn't that long ago where Armstrong was talking about, hey, look, you know, these players are getting younger, they're getting faster, we need to adjust, we need to play faster, we need to find out ways to communicate with these guys better. And I think what Berube has taught Doug Armstrong is that this isn't rocket science. Armstrong said yesterday that we're not working at Google. These guys are hockey players. They want to be treated like hockey players. The Blues, in a lot of ways, under Berube, kind of turned the clock back. They played heavier. They didn't slow it down, but they played a a throwback style of hockey, a bruising style. And Bruby took the accountability back to, you know, when coaches got after guys and they were straight direct. And I think that this group, it's what they had been missing. They needed someone to hold them accountable. They needed a coach that they were scared of a little bit. And Bruby fit that mold, and he knows how to have fun when it's time to. But he gets on him after it's over, and or when they're not getting it done, and he celebrates with them when they do get it done. I think this is a good fit for the culture of this team, and there's no way the Blues are going to let him get away.
I am proud to add to the website as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients. And this is why you can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again. And really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. stlcriminaldefense.com. Check it out. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400, 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
My final question, we'll wrap it up here. You know, you've touched upon it. I've touched upon it, what this means for all of us in St. Louis. And until the day I die, I will be screaming from the top of my lungs about what our city has to offer. Lord knows we've got issues, but sports can bring a community together. And this is example number one times a million. You're around a lot of the national writers and those around that cover various sports, but then when the big, you know, moments happen like a Super Bowl or this or the NBA Finals or a World Series, you see those writers and they come around to cover these events. What do you think this has done with the national narrative of St. Louis and going back to the relocation letter where it really said that, you know, it disparaged the city in an awful way from business to the people to sports to what could be handled here. And now all of a sudden you see how this has grown. You see that there's going to be 3.4 million people coming to Busch Stadium. We're going to get an MLS team. It's going to happen. When you see those things happening, how do you think it's changed the narrative nationally to where not only does it, you know, people go, oh, that's St. Louis, that nice place, but they also say, maybe that's a place I need to invest in. Maybe that's the startup. Maybe that's something good for business. Hey, I went there. I saw it. It's a cool place. What do you think that's done since Stan Kroenke and Demoff decided to leave and do it in a manner that was egregious and awful? In all, what I'm trying to say is, what do you think it's done?
Well, I think it's just another example of how people who actually care about the truth can't believe what was said. Some people don't care about the truth, and we can't tear ourselves up over that. You know, you can't argue with someone who doesn't focus on facts. As you said, St. Louis has its issues. We're not going to run from those and hide from those. But when it comes to loyalty to sports teams, which is what the Rams attacked, no, there's no debate. I mean, look at how many people showed up to watch a game that at an arena that the game wasn't at. and the fact that they had to create spillover venues to watch a hockey game on the road. What the Rams wanted the world to believe was that St. Louis sports fans aren't loyal, and while omitting the fact that, that they weren't loyal to their fans, they forgot a very important part of that. Bigger than that, in terms of the business side of things, you know, this has been a boon for the Blues. They have showed what support can flood around a team. They have received more support since the Rams left. You know, this is the same crowd that's going to be supporting MLS. I think with anything, it shows that if you care about the community and you make an effort to be competitive and people feel like you're trying to give them a winner, they'll back you. And that's what I've realized about St. Louis, man, is it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit kind of St. Louis centered. It likes what it likes, and it's not going to apologize for it. But if it's in on something, and if it feels like something's about St. Louis, then it will go all in. I mean, look at PGA. That's the perfect example of that. The fans are so thankful it came that they just flooded it. And I hope too, if there's a way to carry this forward, because there were hockey writers who were talking about, hey, man, these St. Louis people are nuts. Like, you know, these crowds are great, and you look at all these people going at Busch Stadium, and man, this is kind of a market that is more impressive. I hope it carries over into other events. NHL All-Star Game is coming. You know, the Sports Commission in St. Louis works really hard to bring compelling, awesome events to St. Louis.
Yes, they do.
And those events should be, I think, viewed with the same way. It's like, hey, this is coming to St. Louis. Let's show up and show what St. Louis is about. And, you know, I think, you know, if you have a chance to go see a gymnastics NCAA tournament final, go see it. Because I'm telling you, you're going to see some of those amazing athletes you'll ever see. And also, too, everything that happens here is factored into what could happen here next. Something about the Sports Commission is that, you know, people think that they are, you know, this big public, you know, funded thing. No, they're not. They're privately funded. They're out there raising money and working people to try to get these events. They're not taking taxpayer money. They're creating relationships and trying to get cool things to town. And, you know, I don't know that I don't like the idea of St. Louis always having to try to prove the Rams wrong. I get it. And I completely my middle finger towards Stan Kroenke is up harder than anyone except for maybe yours.
Correct.
I get it. But you know, it can be beyond that. It can be about kind of showing what St. Louis is about and being proud to be a part of this community without having to, you know, say stick it to Stan. You know, the Rams lied and they knew it. And unfortunately some other people believed it. But, you know, the list is long of things that prove that wrong. It just got a big, big bullet point on that list with this run to the Stanley Cup championship and the way the town rallied around it. There can be little Stanley Cup, you know, championships all throughout everywhere. It can be by, you know, the way that we take care of people better in our community. It can be by the way that we deal with each other in everyday life, you know, tearing down some of the barriers. And it sounds corny, but I do think it's true. Like, you know, when you go to that parade and you see all these people who turn out, these are your neighbors. These are the people that, you know, are from your area and identify as St. Louis. So, you know, when we can come together for about anything, it's good. And I think this is a reminder of that. It doesn't always have to be about proving the Rams wrong. It can be about, you know, being a place that, you know, the Rams end up saying, man, we were wrong about that place if they're ever truthful with themselves.
Absolutely, and well put. You did a remarkable job covering the Stanley Cup Finals and encapsulating what it means and capturing the moments, and you're to be commended, to you and your teammates at the Post. And as always, these are fun to do on Fridays. I remember I was in Mexico, you were in Winnipeg when we started to talk about the Blues. It's unbelievable.
Oh my God, man, it's wild. I feel like a year has passed since then, but
feels
thanks
that
for
way.
Letting me ramble on. I probably need to get some sleep, but thank you, man. I enjoy it. And thanks too for giving me your perspective. It's been fun to chat with you about this, and and talk with you about this run. I know that you know Puck, you know some Puck more than you let on these days, but you've been there for some of the glory days too. You should do a podcast on one of those, some war stories from the hockey days.
This run did flood me with so many memories of being a part of the, I was with the Blues for over a decade, well over a decade. And Bernie Federko was in my wedding. I mean, he's one of my best friends.
How about that?
You know, they used to, you know, they, well, they used to, they still do. They called us the sisters because we would always go out on our own and have dinner and hang out and do different things. I mean, it's just, you know, time with Ken Wilson, Chris Kerber, Kelly Chase and Bruce Affleck and, the producer Tim Papst, who still is there, and you know, I mean, it's just it's great. I mean, I'm so happy for all those guys that have really poured their heart and souls into trying to make it a good product over the years, and it's wonderful for them and wonderful for the city and the fans. So it's a great time to be a St. Louisan. There's no doubt.
Well, too, let me point, since you mentioned Bernie, how about this? Federko said that, he said on when we went to Boston the first time, I was talking to him, and my God, has there ever been a nicer Hall of Famer?
He's the best.
I mean, like, I don't, I've never met someone with less of an ego, with more reason to have one than him. Amazing to just joy to talk with. He goes, yeah, this is only the second Stanley Cup final I've ever been to.
I know. It's incredible.
And he goes, he went the year he was drafted.
That's right.
And then he went, this was the only other time he's been. And I guess, you know, that's something I didn't realize. Like, the NCAA Final Four, for example, everybody goes. Like, all the coaches go. The Stanley Cup Final, like, no, if you're not in it, you don't go.
Oh, no.
Like, you probably don't even, like, some of them don't even watch.
That's right.
It's painful. So he was, like, literally, I mean, he was on a joyride this whole trip. So to see him kind of almost like a kid, you know, experiencing this, and like he was a kid the last time he was here, that was such a cool thing. And it kind of gets to one of the things that's really neat about the Blues, and then we'll end it. But the amount of guys around the team who played, who are still right there, you know, a part of it, a fabric of it. That's something that the Cardinals and the Blues both have that not very many other teams have, man. Like, the amount of alumni who care, who are invested, who are involved. Find me another team that has a Bob Gibson working with Jack Flaherty on a slider. Okay. Find me another team that has Bobby Plager in the dressing room with the cup. Okay. Like, that, this doesn't happen all that often. And there's a lot of it. I mean, how about the fact that, you know, Cam Jansen is up there, you know, watching with the guys, like, living and dying with every moment, just like the guys on the ice. I mean, and it's not a age thing. You know, Bobby Plager's up there. Cam Jansen's still a young guy. I mean, it's a family. And I think that's something that's really cool in both of these two teams that we have.
Remarkable. It's great. Ben, as always, thank you, and we'll catch you up next Friday.
All right, man, we got to be more critical about something next time. I'm starting to get too corny on these things.
Yeah, you've gotten real sappy on me. That's all right. Just start watching the Cardinals, and I'm sure you'll get plenty critical.
Yeah, we might have to hit on the Cardinals next time. The cocky season's over, boys. Time to step it up.
You got it. You got it. Talk to you next Friday.
Sounds good, man. See you.